specialist. I've been doing this for about a year now, and before that I have about a 20-year history as an industry accountant, so working with mostly food manufacturing and CPG companies. And so when I sort of went independent, cost reduction is one of the things I'm passionate about personally. If I don't have to spend it, I won't. And so that's what we try to do with our clients. And, you know, it's interesting, especially for telecommunications, which is the category that we started in. It's a downward price market, but a lot of the times vendors don't reduce your price unless you ask. So we've come across clients that are paying ridiculous amounts for services just because they've been a long-term client and just never thought to revisit what they started with. So that's just a little bit of a starting point. Thanks for letting me know kind of what you're hoping to get out of the session. I hope I have that sort of in my content, but feel free to ask questions as we go along. I'd like this to be as interactive as possible. And definitely I have some sort of discussion points flagged as we go through. Okay. All right, so sort of the agenda for today, I'm gonna sort of start with a couple of industry insights, what we see at Schooling Mitchell, what kind of is a general business approach to take for cost reduction, some thoughts from Harvard Business Review, and also from Development Bank of Canada, BDC. I've been reading a lot of their articles lately, and interestingly enough, a lot of their articles from the financial crisis in 2008 also apply to what people are going through now. Cause may be different, but definitely in terms of the business environment, it's similar. Then we'll talk about cost management strategy. So just kind of the global view. What is a cost management strategy? How should you think about managing costs in your business? And then we'll specifically kind of zero in on cost reduction, because I think cost reduction is probably the best fit strategy for most companies today. It's by no means the only strategy. In fact, I was talking with sales management firm, and some of their clients are actually in acquisition mode, because this is a good time to pick up maybe some of those companies they've been eyeing that are, you know, more value for money now, because, you know, they're struggling, and that's the reality. But from that perspective, that client is actually spending more money than they would pre-COVID, but for good reason. So industry insights. So as Kelly mentioned, we find about 28 to 35% of savings for our clients in the categories that we look like, where we look at. And there's a whole range. There's some clients that are fully optimized and there's no savings opportunity for them. And there's some clients where we find in the magnitude of 60 to 90%, depending on what their purchasing history and what their requirements are. So it's not a one size fits all. It really depends on the priority for the business and what they're willing to do to make changes and save expenses. Second point there is from Harvard Business Review. Think of cost management as a way to support your strategy. There is no point focusing on cutting costs if your business strategy is to build. It doesn't make sense to pursue a cost management strategy that is not in line with your overall business strategy. So we'll talk more about that, because that's really key to having a sustainable cost management strategy in your business. And the third point is about having a systematic approach. I don't know if any of you have been in a corporate environment or somewhere in your background where, you know, you just got the email, we're in cost reduction mode /20% across the board. That is not the right way to implement cost reduction. You will be cutting critical costs. You will be impacting business processes. It is not sustainable, and sometimes it does more harm than good in the long term. So that's kind of the overall starting point for cost management. So what is a cost management strategy? So it essentially is a set of defined cost reduction goals that align with the underlying business priority. So, and even when I say cost reduction, it's probably not necessarily cost reduction, but it's about how am I going to think about costs in the environment of what my organization wants to achieve, okay? And that's just kind of step one. The second step is having a plan to achieve those goals. So a lot of the times, if you have a goal, but you've not identified kind of the roadmap to get there, it's not a strategy. It's just a dream, okay? And so when we talk in cost management strategy, we definitely want you to think in terms of what's your business priority and how are you going to get there? Don't just establish a goal without a sort of plan of action of how to achieve it. And there's a quote there from CFO.com that it's probably simple to say, but it's often overlooked to have kind of a goal that's pie in the sky, but not really have a realistic way of achieving it. So what are kind of the three broad cost management strategies? So first one, cost reduction. I think that sort of speaks for itself in terms of trying to cut costs. But kind of, I would say, an often overlooked part of that element is also in enhancing reimbursement. So there's a lot of consultants right now that package some of their services with getting government grants to pay for their services. That is a critical way to save costs. And it's sometimes overlooked because there's a lot of grants people either don't know about or don't know how to apply or kind of take action before they apply. Some of them require that you apply first before you take action. So that's a very effective cost reduction methodology that's often overlooked. And it's probably more present in people's minds now because of all the government initiatives going on. But trust me, there were a lot of government initiatives pre-COVID that people didn't take advantage of just because they didn't know about them. A second sort of alternative strategy.
Sorry, Anne, yeah. I was just going to jump in there with kind of what's going on right now and the focus on all of the other aspects of what the government's doing. Do you know if some of those refunds and rebates are slowing down or they're not taking a look at them as much?
No, if anything, they're actually providing more funding to them, maybe strategically. So, for example, last week they announced additional funding for a program for women entrepreneurs. Program always existed. All the government has done is provide additional funding to make those grants more available. So there's definitely nothing that I've seen that's indicated a slowdown on existing grants, even though all of these other programs are in place.
Okay.
Yeah. Cost optimization. So in this case, you're kind of putting two hats. I wanna spend money, but I wanna spend it in the most optimal way possible, okay? So you wanna make sure that when you're making a choice to spend the money, you're gonna get the benefits that you need to derive out of them. So it's not necessarily about cutting costs, but is making sure wherever you kind of spend that dollar, you're maximizing the value that you're getting out of it. So you might be spending exactly the same amount of money, but you switch to a provider that gives you more service, more bang for your buck. So we'd consider that a cost optimization strategy. And the third option is cost avoidance. And this is just putting something in place that eliminates a future cost. So sometimes this is hard to see because you weren't spending the money anyway. But I would probably say this is as critical as cost reduction because it's one of the ways that you'll see later in the presentation that cost reduction can be a challenge is that costs creep into the system. So if you don't continually kind of have a way of making sure you're avoiding costs that you don't need to incur, you might actually be negating any cost reduction measures that you put in place. Okay. So sort of a question for the group is what strategy would you say your business is currently pursuing, and are you pursuing multiple strategies? Because they may be in conflict unless they're sort of properly separated and aligned to a particular strategy. So I'll just kind of throw that out to the room or to the screen.
I know for us, one of the things, and this goes back a few years ago, we were trying to redefine some things, and we were taking a look at some of the existing things that we paid for. And as you say, sometimes because you're a longtime customer of them, you don't pay attention to what's going on. So it was simple things like Rogers, the internet. It had gotten up so high and there was no need for us to be spending some of those things. So that's kind of where we've checked. We ended up looking at some of the things that we use, like some of the registration packages, and we were able to find some that we were able to cut the costs. So that was a big help for us, especially when you start looking. And then we've also looked at some things that were free and what we could get away with as well, and be able to use that, because there's a lot of good options out there as well.
Yeah, no, that's definitely one thing that we've noted for our clients. Rogers, I would say all the telecom vendors tend not to offer you the best program unless you ask for it. You kind of get grandfathered into whatever kind of program you're in. And if you're not sort of actively saying what's on promotion or what's the latest pricing, you may not even be getting the right service, because obviously internet bandwidth requirements have expanded just over years. And you might still be on the basic service because that's what you could afford, but you could actually get a better service at a cheaper rate 5 years mm-hmm. later. Mm-hmm. And you just didn't know because you never looked.
Yeah, and you never ask.
And you never asked. And you never asked.
I know for us, we went to a lot of our service providers and just asked, like, given the times, you know, can we get a reduction? Or if we sign on for another year or whatever, will you give us a deduction or a reduction? And a lot of them have, actually.
Yes, yes. There are a lot of our waste vendors, for example, would put service on hold without any charge. Because if you're in the restaurant business, guess what? The volume of waste, even if you're still running a takeout service, is greatly diminished. And you're paying for a 40-yard bin, right? So they'll, you know, for the most part, keep charging you for that 40-yard bin unless you call and ask. You know, mm-hmm. maybe you only need pickup once a month now instead of once a week. You know, and that's a good point. You just calling your vendors is enough to trigger a savings opportunity.
Well, even on a personal side, just your insurance.
Yeah.
And some of it too, from a business perspective, the insurance could be different. And if you're in a situation where you have to have cars insured for your business, then that's a big savings. We actually had to call because our son moved back home permanently, and then ended up, we've got a savings of about $150 just on our car insurance, and they send you a check. But if you don't call, you don't get that.
Yeah. And in the insurance industry specifically, it's been a little bit of a mixed bag. Some of them have done nothing, because, well, you have to have insurance anyway, right? But if you are not driving your car, you can call and have your insurance suspended. What we generally say is, though, you could suspend kind of the third-party liability, but keep paying for damage or theft, right? So you might want to right-size your service just based on your new reality, right?
Yeah. I got a cost reduction. I called and they automatically did it. And so for April, we saved 15%.
Yes.
They took 15% off. So I think it's going to carry through multiple months, obviously, as well. So that's good.
Yeah. Good. I, you know, honestly, I hear people say, oh, now you have time. I personally don't have more time, but anybody who does, the time is well spent calling your vendors and asking for a concession. Or just asking what they're offering.
Yeah, and at the City of Toronto, when I was there a couple of years ago, cost reduction is also about sharing the cost reduction with the vendor, with our partner, and ask them to rethink how they would structure their license fee, for example, because we spend millions of dollars in software license, right? And then also talk about how we can reduce the human resources cost by reinvest in staff and also give the some of these non-essential services to a vendor at a lower cost, so you can actually then use the saving to reinvesting in staff, right? So that was one of the alternative strategy that we use at the cities. It's tough because you're, like you said, and you're going to have to really plan and have a goal, knowing that every year we have to deal with 10% reduction over year permanently. So that are always a challenge, especially for IT leaders, because their costs continue rise. On the same time, the business is also demanding more of their services.
No, very true. And I think I later sort of on in the presentation, one of the things we talk about is zero-based budgeting, which is very common in sort of government environments. But that's a way of forcing a full reevaluation every time you're looking at your budget, which isn't common business practice, quite frankly. Usually you look at last year, go up 5% or go down 5%, and that's kind of good enough of an exercise. Zero-based budgeting forces you to say, and maybe with that 10% target that you mentioned, forces you to say, well, what do I really need?
And, absolutely.
Yeah, and take that approach. So I'll just go through these slides very quickly. This just kind of speaks to what kind of underlying strategy goes with what underlying business strategy goes with the cost reduction strategy. And usually it's for a short-term vision. You're looking for cost offsetting opportunities. Your focus is on bottom line savings. In the article on the Journal of Cost Management, it's called Harvest Mode, where really I want to maximize how much value I'm going to get out of my current situation. It can be a long-term strategy. It usually isn't, depending on where you choose to save on costs. Cost optimization, again, this is more of a long-term. It's not about saving money primarily. It's about just thinking about where I want to invest the money for kind of a long-term return or build mode. And the third one is cost avoidance. So this one is usually when you don't want to kind of change your status quo. You want to maintain kind of whatever status you are. So you're not committing to any new expenses, but you're not really focused on cutting your existing expenses either. And it tends to be, you see this more in mature industries where there's not any new kind of market disruptors or anything. So pretty much it's, you know, this is the way my cost profile has always looked like. I'm happy to maintain it, even when there are cost-saving opportunities. Sorry, I muted myself by accident. So we talked about these sort of underlying concepts a little bit. What makes a cost management strategy effective? So one, aligning it with your overall business strategy. Two, knowledge of your baseline costs. And this one is one that, you know, we see in at various degrees in clients. Some clients will tell you exactly how much they paid for a service last month, last year, 2 years ago. Some clients haven't a clue. Some clients will give you a ballpark. In order to be able to really manage your costs, you really need a knowledge base of your costs. So that's kind of step two. Having internal or external benchmarks. A budget is kind of like the height of an internal benchmark. It is definitely not the only one. You could have spending between different divisions. So you have Division A comparing to Division B as an internal benchmark. You could have a forecasting process. That's another example of an internal benchmark. But really the gold star for benchmarking are external benchmarks. What is your competitor paying? What is the industry standard? What are the costs in vendor A versus vendor B? It usually requires more time investment, and sometimes the information is not freely available. You might have to pay to get that industry statistic or that comparative analysis for your competitors. But really, it's the gold star of benchmarking, because you're not then benchmarking in sort of your own financial bubble, so to speak. And the last one is sort of taking action. So making sure that once you've kind of have a strategy and have identified one, you're actually going to apply it. So I have kind of a thought question here for the screen is, how many of these concepts do you apply in your business? How many of you feel really close to what your costs were, or maybe how close were you 2 months ago versus now? And what benchmarks do you use?
I would say for us, I'm not sure if there's specific benchmarks. We create a budget at the beginning of every year. And obviously this year with everything that's gone on, we say, first of all, our projected revenues are going to be lower than what we initially thought, given everything that happened. And then we went back and said, okay, where are the areas that we can reduce our costs without really hurting our potential business growth and what we need to do to still run and be efficient. But, we looked at trying to, where can we be leaner than we were before, and where can we get reductions in a lot of our costs that, which I think you mentioned at the beginning, what are some of the costs which really weren't necessary or really aren't adding that much value, or are the nice to haves, but not really needed to help run your business. So I think that was one of our key things.
And that's a good kind of, like I said, internal benchmarks are good, right? And for you, you didn't just kind of hold to what that initial budget was when your circumstances changed. So having kind of a regular forecast process is important. And for one of my clients, they went from a quarterly forecasting exercise to biweekly.
Because you
want a good sense of what your revenues are, and that might change week over week. And therefore, what are the costs you're willing to give up or match to that revenue?
Yeah. And I would say, one of the big things is at this point in time is you don't know what your AR is going to be, your turnover on your receivables, right? So you have to anticipate, are receivables likely going to slow down? So then what is your cash flow like that you have, and what do you need to sustain?
Definitely a lot more sensitivity around cash flow. I think one of my clients' comments was, cash flow is king right now. Because if you can't control that AR inflow, you definitely want to be able to control the AP outflow.
Right?
That's a good point.
Hi, Anne. I'm just wondering, do you have any suggestions of where to get external benchmarks for consulting companies? We're a small consulting company, and I wasn't sure where we would get that kind of information.
Actually, one of the lesser used resources is the library. And I know nobody wants to go to the library, but they actually have a lot of statistical information available at the library. Yes.
Okay. I didn't realize that. Is there a particular book or something I should be looking for?
I will look up some references and send to you.
Yeah, that'd be fantastic.
Okay. Yeah. And if there's any sort of particular industry, just maybe put it in the chat box.
Sure. Sounds good. Thanks.
Another lesser known source is just government, Statistics Canada. They actually, especially for startups, so it may not be relevant in your case, but if you're consulting for a new startup, they will actually do the market research for you for a specific industry segment and send it to you. Now, it may take them a couple of weeks and maybe in this environment a little bit longer, but they basically, in order to support that kind of entrepreneurial activity, they're willing to do some market research, initial market research for your business. So I will share that link as well. Okay. So those are good sources of information. They may not be as detailed as you would like, but they're definitely available. I would say probably the third one would be, but this tends to be more costly, would be industry or association memberships. So for example, if you're a member of the Canadian Grocers Association, you can get a lot of information about the grocery industry right now. not just historical, but you know, the way the industry is being affected week to week. Okay, but it's usually not free. It's sometimes at the cost of your membership, sometimes it's an additional cost. And so if you're looking at multiple industries, it could the cost could rack up pretty quickly.
Okay, sorry, so I just wanted to let everybody know the chats that are coming in. I'm just making notes as well so I can share them with Anne at the end. So I've got kind of mobile app development, consulting industry, and then what we can do is just share it out at the very end, because as Anne said, she's willing to share some things there. So I will make sure I get it sent to everybody as well.
Thanks, Gail. Perfect. So the next few slides, we sort of talked about, you know, when you're thinking of strategic goals, what stage of growth is your business in? Do you have any significant investments coming up that you might now have to defer or reconsider? Right? In terms of paying attention, so like I said, some people are a lot closer to their spending patterns than others. BDC actually recommends looking at 2 years of financial history when you're looking for cost savings opportunity. That might be a stretch, especially if you're in a stable industry, maybe the most recent year or even kind of a 3 to 6 month range might be enough to give you that sense, but definitely understanding what your costs are is a good baseline. Next one, we've talked about industry benchmarks, competition, your market, what the vendors are offering. Internal benchmarks, yes, they have their downsides, but they're just as valuable in terms of paying attention to where you are relative to where you were if you're looking at history, or where you think you're going to be if you're looking at forecasts. And last but not the least is really taking action. It doesn't happen a lot, but definitely I can't tell you how frustrating it is to have a recommendation for a client and they don't implement it. For me, that's just money going down the drain. And sometimes for good reasons, but really you can't get that lost cash flow back. That dollar, once it's spent, or that savings opportunity may have a time limit. You may not be able to get that savings in 3 months. And guess what? For 3 months, you spent money that you didn't have to. So it's really important to take action once you've gone through that kind of deliberate exercise of evaluating where you are and where you want to be. Okay, so why cost reduction? It might be obvious, but there's definitely certain less obvious reasons to pursue a cost reduction strategy. So first reason, it's direct bottom line benefit. If you save $1 of your costs, depending on what kind of net profit percentage you're operating at, that's multiples of revenue you would need to generate to get that same level of income. The cost reduction analysis reference that I have at the bottom of the slide there has a nice little table that says in order to save a dollar or in order to earn a dollar profit at a 25% profit margin, you'd have to generate $25, you'd have to generate $4 of revenue. How many people are operating at 25% net profit, by the way? Not a lot. So if you go to the other extreme where you're at 1% margin, you'd have to generate $100 of savings, $100 of revenue to get to that dollar impact to your bottom line. So in terms of effort, think of how much you'd have to do to generate that incremental revenue, whereas you could just save that dollar with less effort. Okay, so there's definitely just a return rate to save the dollar rather than generate the revenue. Obviously, we still obviously want to generate revenue, but you can do both. You can do both. The second reason, which is less obvious, is the compounding effect of savings. So for every dollar you save, if you can hang on to that saving and perpetually, at a 2% inflation rate, that represents $50. That's a 50-time return in perpetuity for every dollar you save. So just think, you're not just saving it this year, you're saving yourself from spending it next year and the year after and the year after. Now, the reality is that it can be hard to hang on to that dollar of savings, but if you can, if you're calling Rogers every year, every 3 months, or whatever you have kind of time or ability to support, you are saving 50 times in reality that dollar saving at a point in time. Okay, so that's important to think about. The lost opportunity of not saving that is compounded over time. And the third is organizational control. You have way more control over your costs than you have over your revenues. And obviously this environment has made people a lot more sensitive to how little control they can have on their revenues. But the reality is you can control your costs more easily. So why don't you? Okay. So just sensitive to time. How much time do we have, Kelly?
We've got 10 more minutes, but if people have to jump off, I know Sam said he had to jump off, they can, but if you're able to stay on and ask more questions, then feel free as well.
Okay. So don't have too much left in terms of content, but just wanted to flag some of the common practices if you are following a cost reduction strategy. So we've talked about benchmarking already, so making sure you are kind of in the spend category that you should be for equivalent company or equivalent industry. Zero-based budgeting, we actually talked about earlier. That's one I've highlighted. I'll spend a little bit more time on it. Fixed cost analysis is another one I've highlighted as well, because some of the cost expenses that would have been considered fixed costs, guess what, are up for renegotiation. You should look at them. Do not think of them as fixed anymore. I'll talk a little bit more about it, but that's definitely an area that people should be digging. Okay. Thanks, Aditi. and the last is sort of total cost analysis. So this is more about if I save a dollar in one area, am I inadvertently increasing my cost by 50 cents somewhere else? And sometimes people aren't sensitive to that. So you might implement a cost saving strategy. Great, I save 50% costs in one area, but I raise 75% costs in another area. That is not a good cost reduction strategy. So you definitely want to be sensitive about what impact your decision in one area has on another area. And I think that's one that I definitely in my work history have seen departments implement programs that save them lots of money, but just created work for another department. So the organization as a whole was not better off. And in some cases they were worse off. And you kind of have to then reverse that implementation in order to just be right back where you started. So it's really important not to, especially if you're in a larger organization, not to implement cost reduction decisions in a silo. But we'll speak to kind of zero-based budgeting and fixed cost analysis more. Okay, so Lan talked a little bit about this earlier. It's very common to have zero-based budgeting in government and nonprofit sectors because there's just a lot more pressure on them to be cost-effective. It forces discipline when choosing what cost to prioritize, requires an in-depth knowledge of your business requirements. I would definitely recommend this for anyone who has the time to undertake it. Like, one of the biggest downsides of zero-based budgeting is how time-consuming it is, and if you need to kind of commit, manpower to it that you don't otherwise have, that could increase the cost of it. But this is kind of a unique scenario where we don't necessarily have the same cost basis that we had a year ago. It's the status quo doesn't apply. So what better time for you to say, okay, I'm gonna start from zero and look at each line item and evaluate what it contributes to your business. I think David talked about this when they went back and looked at their budget. They're still starting from a budget baseline, but if you were starting from zero, would you spend money in this category if you had to make that decision today? And it's important to evaluate because there are opportunities for you to go back and either renegotiate that expense or cut that expense. And vendors are open to that because they do know their clients are suffering. One of the things Scotia Bank did, they were actually going to increase their business rates on their bank accounts coming up in May. They started sending the emails back in February. They put that on hold because they're sensitive to the fact that people are going through a more sensitive environment right now. So don't be afraid to kind of question every line item in your expense. It's well worth the exercise in this environment. Other than Lan, has anyone else had any experience with zero-based budgeting? It definitely tends to be more industry specific, but it can be applied anywhere. So don't sort of be afraid to take a look at it, especially if you're going to look at one of your bigger spending categories. Start from zero. If I would have to set this up today, what value would it bring to me, and therefore how much would I be willing to spend on it?
That was one of the things you talk about, and it said in here the not-for-profit sector, so we do that. We don't do the budget, we have somebody else who sets it, but it's the exact same thing. It's going through, starting from zero and kind of going through. But I was on a webinar thing, and it basically said if you were to start your business all over again when you started at zero, exactly what would you do? How would you change it? So it was something to think about. Yeah. So I apologize, that's my dog in the background.
He agrees.
Yeah.
No, that's a very good point. If you were to start from zero today, what would you spend your money on? And really definitely question the things that you wouldn't have questioned, 2 months ago. 2 months ago, because there are opportunities out there that weren't out there 2 months ago. So second practice is about fixed cost analysis. And fixed cost analysis tends to be used in, usually when you're making large capital investments. Do I want to build a second plant? Do I want to invest in a bigger, better piece of machinery? If you're in a service industry, do I want to lease another second office space or expand to a bigger office space? Even though it's used in a scale-up environment, it can actually be used when you're thinking about downscaling. So instead of making that investment, so if you think of it in terms of a service environment, leasing a larger office space might save you money per square footage. But in reality, if most of that space is going to be unused, what does that save you? You might as well be paying more per square footage in a smaller office space that's sized to the revenue that you expect. So that's kind of a tool that people can use in this environment is how can I scale down and what would I do differently if I scale down? Because I know my revenues aren't necessarily going to be what they are or what they were historically. Okay. And yes, you might impact your margin, but the reality is gives you more flexibility to operate at a lower volume of business, at a lower revenue benchmark than you would. Your break-even is much lower than it is if you were kind of upscaling for a larger size of business. So think about that. Think about if you could scale back your business, there might be an impact on your overall margin, but your break-even point will be much lower, and therefore your chances of survival are much better if you can scale down. I think of this specifically, I think, for clients that have had to kind of transition to online presence in order to survive. Yes, the economy is opening up again. You might be able to go back into your brick and mortar premises, but if you think that your revenues are not going to recover in the next, 3 to 6 months timeframe, you might want to reconsider opening that brick and mortar. You might want to consider relocating to a smaller location. These should not be questions that are out of consideration. Challenges. Okay, so you've picked your strategy, you're all aligned, you're ready to execute. What do you need to worry about? So fixed cost base, not as much as an issue anymore, as I said, because we're in an environment of flexibility, but definitely if you're locked into a fixed cost, there may just be no way for you to implement what you'd like to do, right? Or it might cost you to get out of that lease of a larger space, and therefore you really have to think if it's worthwhile paying that termination fee, okay? Or a termination fee on a telecom contract, for example. Cost creep, we touched on that a little bit before. If you are not paying attention to what your costs are, it could creep in other ways. So make sure you're mindful of the kind of second tier and third tier impact of any cost savings that you're implementing. The two kind of challenges I put to focus on, and I'll kind of open this up to everyone in a minute, is stakeholder impact and implementation. One of the things especially food vendors are challenged with right now is how to make their space profitable, right? And so, you know, I've seen pictures of people putting up screens on individual booths, right? So you kind of are more secluded or separating the tables out so you have more space. In some cases, this is a legal requirement. There's nothing you can do about that. But think about the impact on your customers. Think about the impact on your vendors if you're having to incur different costs than you would historically. Think about the impact to your employees having to negotiate a different kind of workspace. It's not to say that you shouldn't pull the trigger. You may still have to. But if you think about how it's going to impact all these other stakeholders, you may implement it in a different way or in a more paced timeline. And that kind of speaks to the next point, which is also implementation. Okay, what should you do if you have a list of 20 things to do? Which one should you prioritize? What should you worry about when you're implementing? So I really like to find out kind of what challenges people are having right now in terms of thinking of ways to save costs. What is your biggest challenge right now in terms of kind of pulling that trigger? You're all ready to save costs today.
Either that or nobody has challenges.
That's good. That would be good.
Ideal world.
Do you ever worry that you're going to disrupt the relationship with your vendor? Is that a concern that you find with a lot of clients? Or
it is probably number two in terms of client impact is that I've been dealing with this vendor for 15 years. I don't want to make that call. How is it going to impact them if I ask for a cost saving or if I switch vendors? And my answer to that is, if it's family, my answer is, okay, you can't call, you know, because that happens. My brother-in-law, I can't. But my answer to that is if the relationship is important enough, they should be willing to work with you. They should be willing to offer you a rate that is at least market rate. They should not be profiting off you if they value the relationship as much as you do.
Right.
Okay. So I would always, always, always encourage people to have the conversation with their existing vendor. The answer isn't always to switch. Sometimes it's just to say, I'm willing to stay with you, but what can you do for me? Okay. And it definitely helps to know what somebody else would do for you. Right? Yeah.
Definitely helps. I guess in the end, you have to think about your own business, because if you're worried about their business and that, it can affect yours.
Yeah. I'm always worried of a vendor that's not willing to have a conversation. It means they're making so much money off you that I can't, you know, if they value the relationship as much as you do, they should be willing to have the conversation. And it may end up being a compromise, but it may be worth it to you to stay with that vendor, even if they make a little bit of a concession, right? Employees, that's another one. I mean, it's really hard because sometimes the answer is headcount reduction, right? That's one of the things people have had to do. But sometimes it's worth thinking about the box. Are there job sharing opportunities instead? Can you put them on furlough instead of, you know, completely taking them off payroll? I think some of the incentives that the government has in place are really speak to how can you make changes as an employer without impacting your employees, because there's definitely something to be said for keeping your entire workforce if you can afford to. And a 75% wage concession is a really big incentive to do that, right? And it may be worth it to you because you have a loyal workforce. Right, and maybe hard to build back up if you kind of shut everybody down and then have to start from scratch again. And customers, obviously, maintaining your revenue as much as possible is important. So you might want to say, okay, I might save money here, but if it's going to impact my revenue, is it really a worthwhile cost reduction? Is it better for me to spend money so that my clients feel better about doing business with me? Definitely an important one for people in brick and mortar environments. They might have to spend money to make sure customers are willing to come back. And I think this is sort of the last one, implementation. So there may be a list of 20 things that you identify. What should you go for first? Definitely look for the low-hanging fruit, because that will generate more cash flow and give you a longer timeline to implement the other priorities, right? If you have 20 things to do, evaluate how much payback it'll give you. If it's a high payback, low effort, low stakeholder impact, do it. Do it, do it, do it, because it buys you time to implement the 19 other things. Right? If you have one that's high payback, high effort, you might want to put that on the back burner, even though there's a high payback, because the level of effort involved won't generate a return quickly enough for you to even survive. Okay? So definitely what I would say is once you've kind of identified cost-saving opportunities, rank them. Go for a high payback, low effort first, then maybe low payback, low effort, then save the low payback, high effort, for the last. You may never get to those, but eventually, right? If you have a cost reduction sort of strategy that's long-term, you'll get to it eventually because you've had a chance to sort of breathe on the other opportunities. And I think that's it. Just some final thoughts, making sure you're linking your cost management strategy to your business strategy, making sure you're focusing on strategies that have an impact to your bottom line, and making sure you're not just using the same tools you always did. There are some tools that make sense to take a look at now because we're in a different environment.
Wow, thank you. That's a very insightful.
You're welcome. You're welcome. Yeah, happy to take any more questions or sort of address anything that I didn't quite get to.
And what are some of the common items, like line items, that you typically see that are kind of the low-hanging fruit in a typical business when you go in?
I've got to say telecom. It is a downward-priced market. And if you, especially if you've never looked at it, you should be spending less money on telecom than you did 5 years ago, or at least be getting more bang for your buck.
Right.
Yeah. And one practice that actually we found it was quite amazing. In a big organization, if you are looking for reducing telecom costs, you can actually hire people. They go around and do the auditing in terms of the use of landline phone and cell phone. And whatever saving they can come up, they take a portion of it. So you don't even have to pay them. But being able to actually get some saving and also permanent saving.
Yep.
And that's been quite a good practice for a larger organization who has lots of, unattended landline phone.
Yeah. Right? I will tell you that's what we do. And the type of things we found are, oversizing. You have 20 landlines and you really only ever operate 10 at a single time. We found landlines that were sitting in somebody else's building. So you were paying for a landline that wasn't even yours. and there's a way to ping phone lines and figure out what they do. Like sometimes it's a landline for a fire alarm, so you kind of probably want to keep that. Or for an elevator phone, you might want to keep that. But it's really sometimes interesting what we find when you do that audit. And for my smaller clients, like they know, they have two lines, they have maybe three lines. But for bigger clients that have maybe 50, 60 lines, it's very easy to have an oversized service that you just don't realize.
Yeah. And what type of clients, what are the size clients that you kind of take on, and how does it work with you?
I would say my smallest client is a two-man marketing firm, right? And we kind of have a minimum spend benchmark to make it worth our while, because we get paid on contingency, exactly the way Lan said. So we will go in and audit, and if we don't find any savings, it's a free audit. You're not out of pocket. But the way we kind of build our business model is we'll take a percentage of the savings and we look for long-term commitment. Like there's some consultants that will come do a one-time audit and that's kind of the end of the relationship. That's not what we do, because we basically want to manage scope, cost creep. We want to make sure that whatever savings we find kind of stick. And we also want to make sure that we're taking advantage of new programs, right? So if this is an exercise that you do once every 5 years, in that 5-year window, who knows what would have happened to your costs, right? So definitely our business model is contingency based.
And what's generally the range on the contingency?
It's negotiable, anywhere from 35 to 50%. Yeah.
And when you say ongoing, so you would do an audit at the beginning, and then would it be year one, year two?
Every 3 months.
Every 3 months. And do you normally see a lot of you know, within that 3 month period see a lot of increase, or?
I would say it depends on the environment. In this environment now, like vendors are putting out programs on a weekly basis, a weekly basis. Kind of pre-COVID, probably not. Probably not. We may see a new initiative that would make sense maybe 2 years into the audit, the quarterly audits, right? So it really depends. It really depends. And in terms of size of client, it's scalable, right? So I can, right now my biggest client is a manufacturing firm, two locations, 100 people. But because Schooley Mitchell has 70 consultants in their head office, it could scale up very quickly.
Right.
Yeah.
Are there any other questions for Anne at this time? Okay, well, I'd like to thank Anne for sharing her thoughts with us this morning. They've been very insightful. And with SBLR, David is looking at, and it came up with Anne as well, kind of a cash flow management session coming up. And we're just looking at a date and time in, I think maybe next month in June sometime. And it's probably a good practice for you kind of going forward and to kind of go along with what Anne was saying. But we also have a few other things on the go. Tomorrow is a product management session, kind of moving at startup speed in a regulated environment. And the fellow is going to be talking about how he started the Planswell product, and he built his team, scaled it up from 57 employees, and it ended up being a $60 million valuation. He's going to talk about kind of the lessons that he learned along the way. Next week, we have a lunchtime session on resilient well-being, living with uncertainty. And there is a team that's going to be talking about accessible strategies to move you from worry to well-being. The lady she's coming in to speak, and she actually she's a mental health expert on that. If you want to take a little bit of a break, we're actually doing a movie trivia madness, just a lunchtime, a really quick 30 minutes to go through a few questions. Just most people are saying that they're sitting here at their desk and realizing that they're not taking a break. But one of the big sessions we've got, and we just put it together yesterday, but with everybody starting to head back to work, and it's the beginning of the return to the workplace, we actually have an employment and labor lawyer from Wilson Vukelic, Dan Condon, coming on, and he's going to be talking about the considerations for employers with everybody gradually returning to work. What are the key matters that you should be considering as your employees kind of come back into the physical workplace? And what are some of the things that you have to be aware of? Because there's going to be a lot of policies that have to change. And what are your new policies and procedures that you're going to have to put into place? So that is actually next Wednesday from 1 to 2 p.m. And as usual, just sign up on the website and we'll send you the link the day before. And then the one last thing here is we have our CIO peer group next Thursday, May 28th. And the fellow that's coming in has written a few books on mastering technology for non-tech leaders and 10-minute reflections, kind of volumes 1 and 2, some of the steps that you should be able to take. But what he's going to be addressing is exploiting disruption to build a resilient business, especially in a crisis. And he's kind of going to apply the hindsight that could have saved Kodak, Polaroid, and Blockbuster going forward. So those are some good discussions coming up. Please sign up on the calendar. And if there's nothing else, everybody have a fantastic day. Enjoy the sun and enjoy this upcoming weekend. And we look forward to seeing you online again.
That's good.
Okay.
Bye, everyone.
Take care.
Thanks, Anne.
Thanks, Anne. Thanks, Kelly.
Thanks so much, Anne.
Great conversation.
Thank you.
That's good.
Yeah.